After clinching the NFC West on Thursday night in Seattle, the 49ers had the weekend off. But there was still some rooting interest for 49ers fans on Saturday, as the number two overall seed in the NFC is still in play. The Minnesota Vikings held on to that in improbable fashion against the Indianapolis Colts. Now the 49ers return to work to face the Washington Commanders on Saturday at Levi's Stadium in what could be a preview of the first round of the playoffs. Jennifer Lee Chan and I will discuss the importance of the number two seed, where the 49ers defense ranks among the best in franchise history, and of course, we still have plenty to say about Brock Purdy. Also, longtime team photographer Michael Zagaras joins me to talk about his amazing book, Field of Play, 60 Years of NFL Photography. All that and more on this episode of 49ers Talk, coming at you right now.
Welcome to another edition of 49ers Talk on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your host, Matt Mayoko.
All right, this is 49ers Talk brought to you by Big O Tires. And I just get so fired up, Jennifer, when I do that opening and I say, 49ers Talk coming at you right now. I feel like Greg Papa.
You kind of get that vibe too. I'm getting it.
Yeah, there's... Yeah, so it was no 49ers game over the weekend. Of course, Thursday night, the 49ers clinched the NFC West. And then there was still a very important game for the 49ers on Saturday. And I got to tell you, Jen, I was up in Jen with two N's, by the way. I was up in Napa, and me and my wife met some relatives up there. And I checked out the first part of that Colts-Vikings game. And, you know, I saw it was like 33-0, and then drinking a little bit of wine in the middle of the day. And I'm thinking, wow, this wine has hit me pretty hard, because it sure looks like, my eyes are deceiving me, because it sure looks like the game's like tied now. Well, my eyes weren't deceiving me, were they?
No, craziest. What a comeback. I watched the entire thing, and the biggest comeback in NFL history by Kirk Cousins, one of Kyle Shanahan's favorite quarterbacks, of course. Unfortunately for the 49ers, Vikings hold on to that number two seed. So they've got to go back to work coming in.
Yeah. And they do go back to work, 49ers, what could be an NFC first round of the playoff preview, 49ers and the Washington Commanders coming up. The 49ers had some Zoom meetings on Sunday, so they weren't totally off, but they weren't out there in the field. And then they'll get back out there for a short week coming off. Well, I guess it's a long week because they played on Thursday, isn't it? But it's a short week for the rest of the league. All pretty much all Saturday games, at least, almost all Saturday games. So the 49ers play a Thursday night game 1 week, Saturday night game the next week. And I don't know that we've exhausted our Brock Purdy conversation, because he's the guy that everywhere I go, people want to talk about Brock Purdy. And I don't blame people for wanting to talk about Brock Purdy, because he's given us all a lot to talk about.
Man, what a gutty performance for him, especially
gutty.
With...
Is that your like pun intended? Gutty, because he had the oblique.
Because he was dealing with oblique and rib injuries, and he played so well. He never let on that he was dealing with any injury at all. I talked to players in the locker room afterwards, and they're like, never even knew that he was dealing with any injuries. It looked like he was, normal. He wasn't flinching. He wasn't grimacing in pain. He really just, acted like nothing was going on. He said he did feel it a little bit out there. But after the game, Kyle Shanahan said the next day on Friday that he actually felt better after the game, maybe moving stuff around, moving the muscles around, helped him kind of move that, the bruised blood area around, and he felt better the next day. So
that kind of sounds gross, moving the blood.
Well, when you got a bruise, the blood that comes out from your bruised, torn muscle, it gets stuck there, and that's what causes the pain. So when you move it around more, you get, that's why like things like Theragun, that type of thing, moves that, scar tissue around that bad, the kind of the blood that releases from your muscles. So this is your little science anatomy class for today. Moving that around.
I didn't sign up for this. I hope you're not going to test me.
Makes you feel better in the long run. So, sometimes movement is better when it's just a bruise like that, or it's, some sort of minor tears, obviously bigger tears. You don't want to move it around for a while until the swelling goes down. But obviously he felt better afterwards.
Yeah, Kyle Shanahan said that he, when he talked to the trainer, the 49ers athletic trainer, he was feeling better on Friday than he did during the week. And so he felt like he should be feeling a lot better by the time this next game rolls around. A couple of the other injuries, Charvarius Mooney-Ward goes into the concussion protocol. And we didn't talk about this after the game on Thursday night, but Ward was, he was shadowing DK Metcalf and did a really good job on him, really limiting, you know, he had some really good coverage. The Seahawks completed some tight window throws there to DK Metcalf, but the yardage was really down. And then he left and was evaluated for a concussion. He actually cleared the concussion tests, and so he was eligible to go back in the game. But Kyle Shanahan, or, you know, people over there on that sideline were like, you know what? He doesn't seem right. So keep him out. And then Jack Rabbit Jenkins, Janoris Jenkins stepped in, and he seemed to play pretty well too. Guy who's just, you know, veteran guy who's been around for a long time, just came to the practice squad a couple of weeks ago. So he stepped in and played. But so Charvarius Ward reports concussion symptoms that following day on Friday and goes into the concussion protocol. And then a couple other injuries. Ambry Thomas had an ankle, and Danny Gray had a hamstring, and both of those MRIs checked out pretty good. So they'll be day to day. But Charvarius Ward, I mean, when
can
I think
about him a little bit more,
let's do that, because he deserves it. And I think that, you know, he got a lot of press. We talked a lot about him in the preseason and training camp, because you could tell this guy is special, and he, boy, he's as good as it gets, I think. And he's the best cornerback the 49ers have had in a long, long time. And I don't know how far back we'd even have to go to talk about how he ranks among the best seasons that the 49ers have had at that position. But yeah, haven't you just been impressed by everything about him?
Especially when I rewatched the game, I watched how physical their matchup was. Charvarius Ward and DK Metcalf, I mean, they were on each other the entire game, as long as, you know, Charvarius Ward was in the game. I mean, DK Metcalf had his jerseys, had his shoulder pads. I mean, every time they were out there, there was physical contact. There was very little separation whatsoever. And Charvarius Ward stuck with him and really got underneath the skin of DK Metcalf. And remember, DK Metcalf got that taunting call. I spoke to a couple of players afterwards in the locker room. They said he's kind of easy to get, you know, get at, because emotionally he gets very into the game. They really worked him over physically and mentally. So, I mean, I know Charvarius Ward, he's kind of quiet in the locker room, but you can tell that that was a big game for him, and he stuck with him and was just incredibly physical with him without getting defensive pass interference. So his technique is really good.
And so you talked about he, in effect, drew the taunting penalty on DK Metcalf and also drew an offensive pass interference. And there was a play earlier in the game where the 49ers thought that DK Metcalf had committed an offensive pass interference penalty. It wasn't called. But then later, when he kind of grabbed at Ward's uniform and kind of yanked him down and caught a pass, I think it's like a 28-yard pass, but it went back. So when you factor in, was that 25 yards in penalties that Metcalf had against Charvarius Ward, and I think he only gave up like 33 yards in pass coverage to DK Metcalf. So the net was really good for the 49ers in that. And, you know, speaking of Charvarius Ward, you know, I'm just kind of looking at how many Pro Bowlers, you know, could the 49ers have on the defensive side. And I don't know that Charvarius Ward will make the Pro Bowl, just because, I don't know, there just doesn't seem to be a whole lot of buzz about him around the league. And he doesn't have like big interception numbers, which usually gets the attention. But here are some guys that I think, and I know you'll agree with me, guys who should make the Pro Bowl, and some of these, most of these guys probably will, but Nick Bosa, obviously, and definitely on the short list, and probably right now the leader for Defensive Player of the Year, NFL Defensive Player of the Year. Fred Warner should make the Pro Bowl, and he probably will. And now here are three guys who should, but I'm not sure they will. Mm-hmm. They, and again, I'm saying they should. So five guys off the 49ers defense, I think, are worthy of the Pro Bowl. And they are Nick Bosa, Fred Warner, Dre Greenlaw, Charvarius Ward, and Talanoa Hufanga.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dre Greenlaw has put together an incredibly good season. And you look at how much he has improved from the, just the beginning of the season. He had tough couple games at the beginning and then has really kind of blossomed into this. Like, not only does he cover really well in that second level, he hits really hard, he tackles really well, very few missed tackles. He's done such a great job. But not that Fred Warner overshadows him, but there's always so much press and talk about Fred Warner that, I mean, I know Dre Greenlaw's name came up a ton going to Seattle and what he did in 2019, but he's put together a really nice season. And you're right, those three players may or may not get to the Pro Bowl, but they have put together Pro Bowl level seasons.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so Dante Whitner, our colleague at NBC Sports Bay Area, and of course, the hard-hitting safety, Dante Hittner, back in the days of the 49ers. And, you know, he's on those Harbaugh teams as the enforcer in the 49ers defensive backfield. He said on the post-game show, following the game Thursday, that he thought that this 49ers defense is the best in franchise history. And he talked also about just how, you know, the rules have been changed through the years to benefit the offense. But this 49ers defense is kind of rewriting their own rule book as far as what defense is all about. And when he said that, I was surprised because, you know, first off,
really good defenses.
Yeah, I would think that he would have thought about his own defenses like in 2012, right, the team that went to the Super Bowl. And then the thing that I thought of too was, you know what? I think you have to win a Super Bowl. When you were with the 49ers and you talked about the best, you know, the best seasons, almost anything, I think you almost have to say, yeah, it has to be, they have to cap it with a Super Bowl victory. And so the, it's not written yet as far as how good this defense is or will be looked back upon. But here's one thing that I found interesting. Right now, the 49ers defense is number one in the league for yards allowed and number one in the league for points allowed. And the 49ers have never had that before. And the one defense that comes to mind that I would put ahead of this defense right now is the 1984 defense. They were number one in the league with points allowed, but they weren't, they were like 10th in yards allowed. But of course, they finished the Super Bowl with a 38-16 victory over Dan Marino and the Miami Dolphins. And that was a high-flying Dolphins offense. They averaged 32 points a game. 49ers held them to 16 in the Super Bowl. And the defensive backfield of that team, Ronnie Lott, Eric Wright, Carlton Williamson, and Dwight Hicks. And the defensive line reminds me a lot of this current defensive line. Fred Dean, Hall of Famer. He was a little bit, I think, on the downturn at that point. But they had like 8, 9, 10 guys on that defensive line that they would just come rolling at you in waves. And it's very similar to this defense. So it's, you know, Fred Dean, Lawrence Pillars, Manu Tuiasosopo, Dwayne Board, Jeff Stover, Michael Carter, Gary Big Hands Johnson, Louis Kelcher, Jim Stuckey. So those are a lot of names. And we could do the same thing with this year's team with all those names. So, I was kind of taken aback when I heard Dante say that, but the more I think about it, I think that this defense has definitely put itself in the conversation, and now it's a matter of how do they finish the job in these final 3 weeks of the season, but more importantly, what they do in the postseason.
Yeah, they've got to keep it rolling. You watch, you know, it's, I took note of what D'Amico Ryan said about how many guys are in frame. And when you rewatch games, there is very fluid. I mean, occasionally there's a blown play where there's an explosive, like the first play from the Miami Dolphins game. But generally, when you look at the replay, you've got one guy heading towards the guy who, the opposing player with the ball, and then there's guys around him. So if there is a missed tackle for some reason, they don't get much further. They get maybe 1 or 2 yards further because they are so complementary with each other on the field. And they aren't allowing explosive plays, which is pretty remarkable for what they have gone through, the injuries that they've had, losing Emmanuel Mosley. You have guys on the interior of the defensive line that have, you know, have been lost for injury as well. And you look at the depth that they have and how they've used it and gone through it, and they're still playing incredibly well.
Yeah, they are. And it, again, it'll be, this linebacking core is so good. The defensive backfield has played well. The defensive line has played well. D'Amico Ryan's pushing all the right buttons. So everything's really, really going well for this defense. And they seem to be peaking at the right time too. I mean, they played some really outstanding games here recently, and there's a chance that they'll be getting Javon Kinlaw back. At least that's the hope and the expectation for the team. That, they are a little bit thin right now on that defensive tackle front, with Hassan Ridgeway going on injured reserve, most likely means he's out for the season. I think we talked about this a little bit on the last podcast, but 49ers have used 6 of their 8 return from IR designations, and they're holding out, they're holding out hope that Elijah Mitchell will be back at some point in the postseason. And then if Javon Kinlaw, they're planning on activating him, or at least opening the practice window, I should say, on Monday for him. So those would be the 2 right there. And so that probably means Hassan Ridgeway won't be back, but they're hoping to get Kevin Givens back. And of course, Eric Armstead playing a lot right now. So Kinlaw is important from the sense that, they could use another big body in there, a guy who can be a rotational player. And I would suspect that, they won't be asking him to play, 50% of the snaps or anything like that, but he can still serve a pretty big purpose for the 49ers basically on all 3 downs. Right. I mean, first and second down, and then occasionally pass rusher too.
Interesting how you said peaking at the right time, because at the beginning of the season, it didn't look like the 49ers defense was that good of a group. They hadn't kind of synced it up together. They hadn't, built their chemistry together, because those first few games of the season, they lost games that they really shouldn't have lost.
Yeah, but they were always really good. They would always have a late breakdown. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, like that game against the Bears I'm thinking of, right, and the game against the Broncos. They dominated those games for about 3 quarters. And then there were some late breakdowns, mm-hmm, that, for the Bears, they allowed a long drive for a touchdown to lose that game. And it's the same thing with the Broncos.
Mm-hmm. Right. So now they're playing a full 60 minutes. So I don't know whether it's, sometimes at the beginning, you look at the off season, some guys didn't play during the off season. I think that has a influence on the early games in the season, and then just the endurance, because training camp is not the training camp that used to happen, right? There used to be 2-a-days, there used to be a lot more cardio, so they're trusting those players get their cardio in. But again, you can be in great physical shape and not be in great game shape, so it's makes sense that kind of around week 5, week 6, which is where they really started playing better together through the full 60 minutes, and that's when things kind of turned around, and now they have put together these 7 games where they have really dominated other teams.
Yeah, 7 game winning streak for the 49ers. They're 10-4, 1 game back of the number 2 seed. I think they're locked into the 3 or the 2 or the 3. They're not going to be the 4th seed. That'll be the winner of the NFC South. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to make for a very interesting postseason. So we're going to talk more about that a little bit later, but right now going to step aside for a word from Big O Tires. And when we return, I'll be joined by Michael Zagaris, the man, the myth, the legend, rock and roll photographer, NFL photographer, and he's got quite a book out, and it might be a little bit late to stuff it in your stocking, like the stockings behind me here. And also it's a really big book, so you'd have to be a pretty heavy duty stocking, but Field of Play is the book. And we'll talk to Michael Zagaris right after this.
End this year on a high note at Big O Tires year-end sale. Get great deals on name-brand tires for cars, pickups, and SUVs. Plus, save on auto care services with financing options available on credit approval. Visit BigOTires.com for all year-end sale offers. Ends January 8th.
Life is uncertain. It's okay to feel stressed, anxious, worried, or frustrated. CalHope can help. Access CalHope's free and secure mental health resources. Call 833-317-4673 or live chat at calhope.org.
All right, we're back on 49ers Talk, and I'm joined by a man who needs no introduction. So I'm not even going to say your name or anything. No, this is Michael Zagaris. 60 years as a photographer. Wow.
I know. I mean, honest to God, I never thought I was going to reach 30 years of age. So it's kind of like, now what?
Yeah. Hey, you got this book out, which is awesome. Field of Play. And I think the first time I saw it, I just went through it and looked at all the pictures. Then I went back and I read it from front to back. And it is so great. And it is the perfect holiday gift for anybody with a football fan in the family. Tell me about the inspiration behind this book.
You know, it was always in the back of my mind from the time I started shooting to do something like this. I remember, you know, as a kid, as a freshman in high school, my parents got me Robert Rieger's The Pros for Christmas. And that knocked me out. And that was kind of like the genesis for all of this. And what really pushed me was the pandemic. I had a year and a half with basically where you're closeted with not a lot to do. So it enabled me to go back through voluminous files, you know, first with family stuff and then the football stuff. And I thought, well, you know what? Now's the time to do the book. And the book I always wanted to do was this book. Mm-hmm. I wanted it from my journey, but from a player's perspective. And I wanted it to be real. I wanted it to be transparent. Nothing exploitive, but I wanted the real thing. Mm-hmm. And I knew pictures speak for themselves, but I also thought there should be a narrative. And I was fortunate, Steve Cassidy, who at one point was Madden's ghostwriter, did his radio stuff. And we had collaborated on a number of articles back in the day for Pro Magazine, mm-hmm. out of NFL Properties. He'd be the perfect one to collaborate, and his voice in many of these stories, I mean, he knows football inside out, but he's much like Hunter Thompson. So his prose has the feel of the era of not just football, but of America then. And this is as much about America and Americana as it is about football.
I just love this story about how you got started and, you know, back in the days of Kezar. Just tell us that story about how you first got on the 49ers sideline and started shooting games.
You know, like a lot of my brother and I used to go to hotels to get autographs. After the games, we'd run down to the field to get both autographs and chin straps. In those days, they didn't have a fence around Kezar. It was a very low bar. The only security was SFPD from Park Station next door, about every 15 yards. And the clock would go down to about 20, 19. There'd be, you know, 100, 200 kids with their feet over the wire, and the cops are there ready to stop them. And my brother and I would always let the first wave go. The cops would go for them, and then we'd sprint.
This is after games?
Well, there's still like 15 seconds to go because we wanted to be on the field as the gun went off to get as many players as we could. Well, and after one of these forays, I'm walking off and I see this thing on the ground. Stop. I pick it up. It's a photo pass, but I'm not sure what that is. But in those days, we collected everything. You have chin straps, photo passes, programs. The next week, because we'd always go, and the buses would come to Kezar Pavilion where the players dressed. The players would come out and then they'd go through the tunnel. The photographers would come down the stairs. And that's when I realized, oh, that's what these passes are. They change color every week. I want to be down there. I don't care about taking pictures. I want to be as close to the action as I can be. So I got 15 different colored, you know, art paper, cut it exactly like the press pass, traced the old prospector on each one. And then each week I'd see what color it was, tie it on my belt. We had tickets. So I'd go into the stadium. And the first time I did, I went down, stepped over the barrier. I'm walking on the track. I see one of the SFPD coming right toward me. So I turned and walked toward him, and I see a badge. Under the badge, there's a nameplate. It says Officer Pope. I go, Officer Pope, Michael Zagaris, I'm doing a book called Sunday Gladiators for the NFL. And, you know, no book on the league would really be complete without the denizens of the field, the guardians. Could you get a few of your officers and, you know, maybe get a group right here? I want to get the field and the press box behind because I want to put you guys in the book. He got them together. Nobody ever fucked with me after that.
So the book finally is happening. It's not Sunday Gladiators, but it's Field of Play. And the cover photo is iconic. It's the, you know, the greatest picture ever made of Bill Walsh and Joe Montana. And you were right there. You were on your, were you on your belly taking that picture?
You know, I started out, just walked off, and then I was like, I was crouching down, and then I got closer. And it's one of those things, as you're getting closer, you're just kind of seeing more and more. And, you know, I was so engrossed. They were talking. I couldn't tell you what they said. But then I'm noticing, because it was late in the game. It was the championship game. I think we were up 23-0 at the time. And I thought with the sky and the lights, it was almost like Neil Leifer's famous shot of Alan the Horse scoring in the gloaming, the sudden death. Mm-hmm. So I laid down on my stomach and I got a couple more frames. And I, you know, then everything went back to normal. Joe goes back to the huddle. I thought, you know, I think this is a good picture. But you never know film in those days until you have your proofs done. The next day I'm looking at the proofs. As soon as I saw that frame, I knew that was like incredible.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate to be there on the bench. Without Bill, I wouldn't have been on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at that point in time, I pretty much went wherever I wanted within reason and got what I saw.
And, you know, I did talk to Joe about that photo, and he, you know, it's very poignant for him. Obviously, Bill Walsh is no longer with us, and he just felt like that said so much, like what you were able to capture them. You know, I know Joe said he was really tired and he went down on a knee, and Bill said, no, don't get up. I'll come down and kind of talk to you on your level. So
sure.
Tell me about that relationship, Bill Walsh and Joe Montana. What was that like? What, I mean, there's such genius, right? Of Bill Walsh and, you know, the debate, you know, did Bill Walsh make Joe Montana? Did Joe Montana make Bill Walsh? Pretty clearly, they both helped each other out immensely. Tell me what you remember about how those two worked together.
You know, it was a symbiotic relationship that benefited both of them. I mean, the question you're asking me now, I can answer with all of the other things I know now that I wasn't quite aware of then. I mean, there was tension mm-hmm. from time to time, as there is in a family, in a relationship, but they were perfect for each other, mm-hmm. the right time in the right place. The irony is, once Steve came in, that changed the chemistry again. And you have to know Joe's background to know that Joe had a rough time in high school with his high school coach. Not mm-hmm. a great relationship. Right. The same thing with Dan Devine at Notre Dame. And he's in this great, enviable position. And then here comes Steve Young.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of those things came into it. At that time, there was nothing better. This mm-hmm. was the idyllic relationship. You know, Bill, that was his favorite picture. Mm-hmm. I mean, he loved it. And I think, too, being both an academic and a historian, over time, he started seeing even more things in the picture, maybe some of them that weren't even there. But that's the great thing mm-hmm. about photography or art.
Yeah. You know, you're around the team. You've been around the team for a very long time. What do you see in how Kyle Shanahan and his quarterbacks, what kind of relationships they have? Do you pick up on anything about how obviously, it's such a special position. It's a special position when you have an offensive-minded head coach in particular. What do you kind of draw from, or do you see similarities in how Bill Walsh and Kyle Shanahan handle that position?
Well, I'm not here now as much as I used to be back in the day, but I think there are differences for sure, but there are a lot of similarities. And when you're the quarterback, especially when you're established at a certain point, you're going to start to bring your own personality out. And I saw and see that coming like this year with Jimmy and Kyle. Mm-hmm. You can just sort of see it and feel it. It was that way with Joe and Bill. I mean, Bill was the man. What Bill said went. There were times after plays, sometimes a third down didn't work. Joe would be coming off the field. Bill would meet him 15 yards onto the field. You know, it was basically what the hell happened there? There'd be a quick repartee and mm-hmm. we'd walk back and Joe would be muttering things under his breath that you know, if you're not familiar with all that, you're like, what? Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to Jimmy about that. And Jimmy goes, oh yeah, see, that happens all the time.
Is there one player on today's team that you can't help but make a good picture of? Is there one subject that you know, if he's in your frame, it's going to come out good?
There are a couple, actually. Nick Bosa. I mean, he's dynamic, just the way he moves. He's almost mm-hmm. like a ballet dancer. And this is every play. Even if he's blocked out, I mean, he's going 110%. He's mm-hmm. moving all around. Another one is Debo. Debo's electric. Little different than last year. And the same with Kittle is another one. I mean, they play with reckless abandon. But in this league, then and now, you can do that only for so long. Mm-hmm. And then it starts to catch up on your body. And I think it catches up to you in the sense that I think no matter how tough you are, how good you are, how strong you are, at some point you're going to get that injury, that hit, where it registers like, oh, mm-hmm. and you back off a little. Yeah. But so those guys, they play with that abandon. Fred Warner, you could isolate him every play and get 100 different pictures. And I look the way he and Dre throw themselves around. It's amazing mm-hmm. they're still on the field and healthy.
Yeah, right. Initial reaction or just thoughts on Brock Purdy, your time around him, what you kind of feel from him as he steps in?
You know, he almost seems like a veteran. Mm-hmm. He's kind of like Nick Mullins. Nick, very studious, always preparing because, you know, you've got to be ready next man up. So far, so good. I think the fact that Brock played for 4 years in college started mm-hmm. this has been a tremendous help to him. And I also think in our system, with the weapons he has and the coach he has, this is kind of the perfect scenario for him.
Yeah.
And I think he fits in well.
All right. Z, the book is Field of Play. You can get it anywhere, all bookstores and whatever. It's a great book.
If you love the league and you really want to get behind the scenes, this is the book. Mm-hmm. Even if it was somebody else had done it. And you know what? If you get the book, don't just look at the pictures.
Yeah.
Read the stories. Yeah. There's some incredible ones.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe some more. Who knows? There might be a book in the future on this season in particular, because this has been a wild one for the 49ers.
Yeah. Well, much like last year was. Mm-hmm. Last year was kind of like 88, and we got right to the end. And I thought those from the play-in game, the last game with the Rams leading to the playoffs, to that last playoff game, it was kind of all the same game.
Yeah,
that could have gone either way.
Yeah.
And this is kind of how the league is now.
Absolutely. All right, Michael Zagaris, Field of Play. Get it. You won't be disappointed.
Looking for a bit of adventure this summer? Look no further than a new fuel-efficient Toyota Hybrid. As the industry leader, Toyota offers more hybrid models than any other brand, so you can live life to the fullest while getting incredible MPG. Go farther than ever before this season in the most fuel-efficient way possible, and save big at the pump all summer long in a brand new Toyota Hybrid. It all starts at Toyota's national sales event. Toyota, let's go places.
Your winning career starts at Graton Resort and Casino. Join a great team today with amazing health benefits, working in a fun and fast-paced environment. Now hiring table game dealers, chefs, beverage servers, housekeeping, and more. Full-time and part-time positions are available. Come for the excitement. Stay for the great pay, flexible scheduling, and 401k matching. Apply now and start your winning career today. Visit GraytonResortCasino.com for details.
Fit 8 Energy plus Sports Recovery, the energy drinks for athletes. The number one workout recovery blend in America is now available with 200 milligrams of clean caffeine. Fit 8 Energy is naturally sweetened with only 15 calories, no sucralose, no aspartame, and no compromises. This naturally sweetened clean energy plus sports recovery blend is available in four electric flavors. Visit fit8energy.com for exclusive savings. Hear from different players and alumni on the 49ers You've Got Mail podcast, the team's only player-focused podcast. Each episode, team reporter Lindsay Polaris and players discuss the upcoming game week and answer fan-submitted questions about football, life, and everything in between. We're back on 49ers Talk, and we do this thing, 49ers Overreactions by Toyota. And I was just kind of checking out some of the overreactions coming off of the 49ers victory over the Seattle Seahawks, 21-13 up in Seattle, their second win against Seattle in the past decade. And both, as it turns out, comes with the unveiling of division champion t-shirts afterward. And so the 49ers were pretty thrilled to be getting on their plane and heading home with that new, the new swag of NFC West champs. But here's a good overreaction. This one comes from Jared. He says the 49ers are overusing McCaffrey in the run game. They should rotate Mason and Coleman more, limit McCaffrey to 12 to 15 carries per game. Jennifer, react, overreaction, you think?
I think it's a little bit of an overreaction. I do think that J.P. Mason could get in there a little bit more, but as long as Christian McCaffrey is saying that, yes, he's okay to go in there, I would think that if he does need to tap out, he's got direct communication with Kyle Shanahan. He could say, hey, I'm ready to take a break for a minute, and they'll put J.P. Mason in, which he obviously did very well in Seattle. But as long as he's healthy, just the threat of him on the field changes the way opposing defenses have to plan for the 49ers offense. So I mean, just him being out there makes a huge difference. I was surprised at how many touches and carries and targets he had in the first half. I mean, I think it was like something like 17 out of 20-ish, something around there. There was very, very few targets for anyone else at the beginning of the game. But I mean, he's very well conditioned. He's used to being the workhorse. That was his role in Carolina because he didn't have a strong supporting cast. So he's used to it. But yes, I think, you know, if you look at long-term through the length of the postseason, you know, being careful with him, but not conservative, I think would probably be the best course of action.
I think I kind of disagree. I think they should be limiting his touches. And I think that, I think Kyle Shanahan has pushed all the right buttons this season. But I do think that it just seemed a little bit much on Thursday. And maybe that's because, you know, they felt like they had to win that game. You know, they wanted to clinch it. And maybe they kind of maybe limit his touches a little bit from this point forward. Mm-hmm. But I also think that, I mean, you mentioned all those. I think he had 20 touches in the first half of their 30 plays. Does that sound about right?
So yeah, it was something like that. It was like 75% of the touches were either his carries or his targets.
Okay, that, yeah. And so I do think that we saw it on that play, the George Kittle play, where Brock Purdy worked through four, you know, the fourth guy in the progression was Kittle. But basically the thing that made that play was the defense went over to Christian McCaffrey. And so I think there's probably more opportunities for them to use him in that way as kind of a decoy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's been getting a lot of touches. And it's funny, you know, Christian McCaffrey after the game referred to Jordan Mason as Mariano Rivera because he's the closer. And I think Kyle Shanahan even spoke on Friday that, you know, they can get him more carries mm-hmm. earlier in the game, because his first carry did not come, talking about Jordan Mason or J.P. Mason, yeah. His first carry did not come until there's 3:36 left in the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And he finished with four carries total. And the other three carries were all in a row at the end of the game, 6 yards, 2 yards, and then 55 yards. So I think they can do a better job, or at least just kind of manage this a little bit better, because Jordan Mason is showing he is no slouch. You know, it's a different kind of running style. I think they can work those guys in more not in tandem, on the field at the same time, but maybe just give McCaffrey a little bit more time to catch his breath and, you know, not necessarily save him, but yeah, kind of save him.
Yeah. J.P. Mason went out. I can't remember when it was. I remember tweeting that, oh, J.P. Mason's on the field. And then he was out there for one play and then came back out. He didn't carry the ball, but he was out there. I think it was like maybe one, it was one play. So I don't know what the thinking was there, where like normally when Kyle Shanahan does it, back is out there for one or two, at least two plays. You know, they don't usually rotate out one play at a time for running backs, but I don't know what the thought was there.
Yeah. Okay. And Jed, not Jed York, but another Jed, says 49ers team health is more important come playoff time than winning the two seed. Now I would agree with that. And I guess that kind of goes almost in along with what we just talked about, Christian McCaffrey. Mm-hmm. So right now Philadelphia is, you know, more than likely going to be the number one seed. I think that's kind of a, you know, we can probably put that in, chisel that in granite. Mm-hmm. And then the two seed right now is Minnesota. The 49ers are the third seed. If there's now, I guess my feeling after watching the Vikings fall behind by 33 points, my thought was at that point, it doesn't matter if the Vikings are the two seed or not, because the way they were playing, they would probably end up losing their first playoff game anyway. And so the 49ers would host the second game if the 49ers get past that first game. And the other part would be, even if the Vikings do win their first playoff game, 49ers would have to feel very good about going to Minnesota and playing that team. So I guess I hedge a little bit now because they came back and won that game. But I do think that the 49ers can go on the road potentially for two games and win. I think they have the talent to do it. But in order for them to do that, they have to be healthy. You know, they have to get these guys back. They have to get Deebo Samuel back. And all indications are that Deebo will be available for, you know, perhaps the Vegas game, but most likely the Arizona game. But along with this question is, do you even put him out there on the field? You know, do you give him another week of rest and make sure that he's ready to go? So I think Kyle Shanahan will try to win these games, as you know, unless that week 18 game against Arizona, unless there's just nothing to be gained from it. But you know, they're going to try to win those games. It's just a matter of how you want to kind of manage the playing time. And, you know, let's face it, Kyle Shanahan hasn't been real. There's never been a time where people have wondered, did he take big time players out of the lineup too soon?
Right.
He seems to stick with them, quite a bit, including, you know, just, yeah, late in games where the 49ers seem to have a comfortable lead. And I don't know, maybe it's because of
the math in his head.
Yeah. Right. How many possessions does Tom Brady have?
How much time is left? What's this point spread? So, you know, he doesn't want to leave anything to chance at all. So,
yeah. And I mean, after the game Saturday, you know, you can see how crazy this league can be. And, you know, he was calling offensive plays for the Falcons in the 2016 season, when, you know, he witnessed firsthand how a lead can get away from you. You know, he's had some losses with the 49ers, Super Bowl and the NFC Championship game last year, with 10 points lead in fourth quarters of those games. So, and by the way, on our text chain, someone texted us in our little work chain. I'm not going to say who it was, not going to throw the person under the bus, but it was basically, man, Matt Ryan sure can't hold a lead. And my response, my first response was, oh, is he playing defense now? Like, I think if you're the quarterback and you have a 33 point lead, you've done your work. Now it's up to the defense. And Jeff Saturday, by the way, could have kicked a field goal with about 2 minutes left to put them up by two scores and Maybe he thought, hey, the day of the week is named after me. I can do anything I want. I'm king of the world. But that was a very bad decision by a very inexperienced head coach who, I don't know if he ruined his chances of getting that full-time job.
Yeah, that wasn't a great decision. And it kind of goes to show you how much kind of weight or responsibility is on a head coach's shoulders. And you can just walk in, can't walk in. And, you know, even if you were a player and you have a ton of experience, just how to manage a game and the time clock is so challenging. I mean, you look at Andy Reid, who gets such a bad rap for his time clock management. He's been a head coach for how long?
A long time.
Yeah. So, I mean, Kyle Shanahan, who is also spoken about as one of the best offensive minds in the game, one of the best head coaches in the game. And you look at how many times he's lost a substantial lead in a fourth quarter in you know, the biggest games. And it's not an easy job. And I always think about, you look at what Kyle Shanahan's picture was when he first got the job and what he looks like now. Yeah. It's like being the president of the United States, right? It ages you a ton. It's only been 6 years, and Kyle Shanahan looks, I would say, over 10 years older than when he started.
I would say yes. there wasn't. I remember meeting him at the that Super Bowl in Houston, and I don't think he had a gray hair on his head. And now, he's, you know, I don't know if Grecian formula is in his future or not. But okay, so another one of the overreactions is, hey, the 49ers need to start looking at dealing Trey Lance in the offseason. And I think that's an overreaction because he's young, he's affordable, and you got him for two more years at least. Right. And as we saw this season, it's very important to have a good depth at the quarterback position, because, you know, I think there's only been really the 1 year, you know, 2019 was the only year that Jimmy Garoppolo played every game and wasn't, you know, didn't have any injury issues. So I do think, though, that it's going to be interesting to see what happens at that quarterback position, because the more, not only we see Brock Purdy, you know, nobody cares about what we think, but the more the coaching staff, the more Shanahan, the more John Lynch, the more the team sees Brock Purdy, the more he's kind of not putting his stamp on the team necessarily, but definitely putting his stamp on what his NFL future is. Cause I think he looks like a starter, you know, in the three games. It's a small sample size. I know that, but there was, even with the great start that like Nick Mullins had, I keep bringing up Nick Mullins' name, cause he was the guy that was the closest comp when they drafted Brock Purdy. But even as well as Nick Mullins played early in his career, and, you know, I remember that first year, I think he finished the season with six consecutive starts, and there was a list of like, he ranks fourth all time through, you know, in passing yards through six games. But there was never a point where I thought, oh, he's the future quarterback, he's the future starter. But watching Purdy, you know, his arm strength is better than I thought it was. His pocket presence is really good. The grit, the determination, the smarts. He just seems to be really on the same page with Kyle Shanahan. And Kyle Shanahan, I mean, you captured a moment in the locker room after that game against Tampa where, I got to admit, Jennifer, it was a little bit creepy. You were like kind of stalking those two.
A little bit.
But it wasn't it interesting? Like how
I've never seen that before.
He was sitting down next to him, and we talked about Michael Zegaris and, you know, to him about that picture of he and Bill Walsh and Joe Montana. I was getting vibes, a little bit of vibes from that, of two guys just talking ball very casually and very comfortably.
Right. I've never seen Kyle Shanahan sit down in the locker room like that with a player at all. And I understand that it was, you know, totally different circumstances than have happened with Kyle Shanahan as the head coach before. I've seen him pass through, talk to Jimmy Garoppolo. I've seen him pass through, talk to Trey Lance, but never sitting down like that. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it was checking in because it was a short week and they needed to know what was the plan going forward. You know, with a game on Thursday, how were they going to manage, you know, him getting the full playbook and how they're going to coordinate what plays Brock Purdy likes and how that works with Kyle Shanahan's planning for the game. And, but just the demeanor of both of them, you know, Kyle Shanahan in such a relaxed position because normally he's not before, mm-hmm. after wins, losses, he's never really relaxed like that until the off season. And just to see that struck me. And I was actually, the biggest compliment on that photo was on Instagram that Michael Zegaris actually liked it.
Oh, yeah. That's very cool. I think there was, I think I remember seeing a picture very similar to that also in the locker room of Walsh in mm-hmm. Montana. Right. And so that was, it was interesting. It was one of those, you know, caption this, you know, what are they saying? Or not even caption, what are they saying? But just, you know, it painted a picture of their rapport. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that, you know, his rapport with Jimmy is, you know, at times it's very uneasy. Let's mm-hmm. face it. Right. I mean, it's very uneasy. Mm-hmm. I think they both benefited from each other, but when you have a quarterback who, you know, that you've basically told we're bringing in a young guy to replace you at some point, it hasn't happened yet, but you know, that time is quickly coming. Mm-hmm. It's difficult, I think, to have a real strong bond. I think they work well together, Garoppolo and Kyle Shanahan, but there are obviously reasons why the 49ers opted to move in a different direction. But this just kind of showed like these two guys are on the same page and they talk the same language.
Right. I think that's huge. I think that Kyle Shanahan, one of the things that he liked about, again, Nick Mullins, was that his football IQ and being able to read a defense and, you know, all of those things, the quarterback talk, Kyle Shanahan wants to have a quarterback like Kirk Cousins who they can sit down and talk ball and break down defenses. And while Jimmy Garoppolo has incredible physical talent and he's a smart guy when it comes to, you know, football stuff, I don't think it's at the same level as what Brock Purdy is. And you look at Brock Purdy, and if he was just 2 inches taller, how much earlier in the draft would he have gone?
Yeah.
And you know, that's the one drawback that everybody had for him in his draft comp is that he was only 6'1" and he wasn't going to be able to see over the line. And there's very few quarterbacks that have made it into a long-term career at that size. Obviously there's Russell Wilson, there's Drew Brees, but those are so few and far between. For Brock Purdy, I think he has had to compensate for his size with his football intelligence. And I think Kyle Shanahan loves that about him. And that's part of the reason that they've started working so well together.
Okay. So maybe that's the new comp, Russell Wilson. Yeah. I mean, I say it a little bit facetiously, but not really. I mean,
right.
Think about how Russell Wilson constantly broke the hearts of the 49ers by his ability to keep plays alive in the pocket, running around a little bit, never really, I don't think, burning them with his legs as far as picking up chunk plays, you know, 20 yard runs on scrambles as
clarify
much.
Clarify though that it's Russell Wilson before Denver.
Yes. The Seattle vintage of Russell Wilson.
Yes.
But then like keeping plays alive and then delivering the ball down the field. And you know, we haven't seen that much of it from Brock Purdy, but we did see that game. I guess it was the Tampa Bay game where he did a little bit of that, escaped the rush and made a play to Debo down the right side. So he's got something, and he's Absolutely. One of those guys that the more you look at him, the more there is to like, because he gets it. I mean, I don't want to, you know, a week ago I was telling everybody pump the brakes on all this Brock Purdy love. And now I'm like, you know, I'm waving the heart-shaped flag.
Well, there's that, right. But then there's also what he does post game. His press conferences afterwards were incredibly sincere, doesn't want to take the credit for himself, wants to give it to everybody else that surrounds him, his offensive line, Jimmy Garoppolo, Trey Lance. And that shows so much maturity for someone who's 22 years old. I know he's got a lot of experience, a lot of starting time from Iowa State, but it's hard to find someone who has had success and then still remains humble. And it's all about the team and not about him. I thought that was one of the most mature post-game press conferences for one of the biggest wins that I've seen from a young player since I've been doing this.
Yeah, no, he's been, like I said, man, he's hitting all the right tones, all the right notes on the field and off the field. And then going back to Trey Lance, there's no reason, you know, like my thought would be if the 49ers like Trey Lance, they're not going to trade him because his salary isn't much at all. It's a great salary to have. I mean, the money that he's been paid is all basically, you know, signing bonus money that's already been paid. And the other part is if the 49ers didn't like him and they tried to trade him or open to trading him, then why would any team want him?
No one's seen anything from him. Like, he doesn't have much game film. They don't know whether he can be successful or not. So what could they actually get in compensation for Trey Lance?
If the 49ers were like calling teams saying, hey, do you want Trey Lance? Then those teams would be going like, well, this is buyer beware. Like, why would we want a quarterback who in a very quarterback friendly system, that team doesn't want him. And he's had really good coaching and all this. So it would be kind of like, I don't think we would want him. So I think there's too many reasons not to even go down that road. And right now, I mean, 2 weeks ago, I might've said, wouldn't it shock me if the 49ers go out and make a run for Tom Brady? Well, heck, as we were talking about the 49ers quarterback situation, still nothing would shock me. But right now, I think that the depth chart that the 49ers were prepared to go with this season of Trey Lance and Brock Purdy, that's going to be the depth chart the 49ers have in 2023. The only thing I'm not sure about is, at this point, the order.
Right. Yeah, I think that's what they go with too. Yeah, there's no reason for them to trade Trey Lance, and they're not going to get what they would want for him. I mean, even with Jimmy Garoppolo, who is a known quantity, they wanted to get a first round pick. So I don't know.
I heard two first round picks they wanted for. Of course,
that's I'm
sure they wanted four first round
picks. But yeah. But who's going to give that up for Trey Lance when you haven't even seen him on the field, but for like, you know, not even a half a dozen games as, you know, and so I just don't think it'd be worth it at all.
And also I want to clarify, I have not heard anybody with the 49ers say anything bad about Trey Lance.
No.
They love his work ethic. They love his character. They love his physical tools. The only question I think with him is something that Steve Young said a lot this last offseason. And it's kind of important, I guess, if you're a quarterback, it's just the physical act of having the football go from point A to point B, the target, and, you know, the accuracy and all that. And that's why Brock Purdy, I think, is so eye-opening, because he is accurate on those easy pitch and catches. He makes it look easy. Guys are able to get the yards after the catch because, much like Jimmy Garoppolo, he hits them in stride. So it will be fascinating, of course, this offseason, but of course also there's a lot more fascinating developments that will be unfolding this season as the 49ers, we now know for a fact they will be in the playoffs. We now know for a fact they'll be hosting at least one playoff game, and then where it goes from there, who knows?
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.